Should I tell him it sounds a little insincere? All right, thanks. Sit down, we got something to say. If I was at my church, I would know. I'll tell you what, leave this on right here. Leave this one on.
And when I start moving around, you can turn the other one on, but I like this one right here. If I was at my church, they would do that just to make the preaching shorter. That's the way that works, as long as they cheer. So you all gave up way too quick. That's what it was. Take your Bible this morning, if you would please, and turn to 1 Kings chapter number 17. 1 Kings chapter number 17. A lot of memories. I look around and I see a lot of familiar faces. It's good to see Brother and Mrs. Penn's in the back and just a host of others. I see Mrs. Flesher's back over there. Oh, I can't tell you how much I did not care for English during those days. Between preacher's writing seminar and all the rest of it. And then the Lord moved us to the very first place that Mrs. Whitworth and I had gone was Bern, Indiana. Pastor Rogers was pastoring there at the time. He's in Michigan now. He told me, Doc, you're going to have to teach school. And I said, you don't have a clue nor what you're asking. And he said, no, it'll be all right. It'll be fine. But them young people, those fifth and sixth graders, seventh and eighth graders, and then 9th through 12th graders taught me English do y'all still have an entrance exam kind of for the most part? Okay, entrance exam. How many of you had to take that? Okay, good. We went and took the test and everything else. It's to see if you can pass and not have to take remedial classes. I thought that was extra, you know, that's good, you know, and I didn't know what remedial meant. I went to a public school. And so in that instance, so I take the test and I'm thinking, you know, that was pretty easy, you know. When I went to school, I only had to take freshman composition and senior composition, and I was in church enough that I had listened to preaching all my life. I knew how to make things sound good. And so couldn't spell worth anything, but in that instance, I could make it sound good. So I took the test and things of that nature, and they were asking me. I asked the young people today when we were in the van coming across, I said, do you remember what a gerund is? Some of you that know, shame on you for knowing something that ridiculous, but I know what they are. And so I went through and reminded them what they are. And I said, do you remember what an appositive is? Do you remember all the modifiers? Do you remember which one, what kind, how many, whose? Do you remember do you remember all of those? And after a while, you just kind of fade back and say, oh, grammar. I didn't know it was all that important. I figured, you know, we were going to be here to study the Bible. What else was there to do? We were going to read, study, and that was going to be it. Math didn't have any place in the heart of a child of God. English wasn't going to be all that important. Little did I know that there was going to be a test that was given along those lines. So I went and took the test. They said, if your name appears out on this wall, you're going to have to take English class. You'll get to pay for it, but you don't get any credit for it. I said, well, no, that ain't right. And I learned to find out that wall was called the Wailing Wall is what it was, because there were so many people finding their names up there. And so I got to take some English and begin to learn those things. Little did I know how important it was going to be. Little did I realize the impact that the English language was going to make. And knowing grammar and that structure was going to make a difference. But I walked through the halls and have walked through them many times. But even today, as I walked through there, we turned right down there by the post office. That was a place where I first had met my wife. She wasn't at the time. Let me tell you just a little bit of how that goes. How many of you couples are in here dating right now? You're on a date right now. Are you? Come on, raise your hand up. Don't be ashamed. And so. Behaviors. Okay. All right. Good. Reason for that is I couldn't see your hands, and I was getting a little concerned there. So raise your hand. So in that instance, I was setting. There was a girl at the time that I didn't like her. She worked on a bus route, but she saved me a seat. and in about where Brother McSpadden is sitting right now. And so we came in, and she had a class in chapel before chapel, and so she'd save seats, and I came in there. And when I was going to college, this is the way it worked. I had a list. And look, I'm dumb as a box of rocks and ugly as homemade soap. And so I figured, you know, I looked around and I saw these other fellas that were walking around with these very attractive girls. And it's like, wow, if they've got a chance, I might have one too. Look, fellas, you may have a chance. You might. Trying to give you hope. That's all I can give you. So one day I was sitting back there, and all of a sudden this blonde stepped up to the platform to sing a special. It was back in the days where we had big hair. Well, we didn't have big hair, but the girls had big hair. Love that time. Love it. And she got up. Brother Hiles was here on that day. And she came up and sang. I don't remember the exact song, but I remember when she started singing, I remember looking up. And I looked over at the girl's name was Lisa, and I said, Lisa, who is that? She goes, I don't know. I said, well, find out who that is. So sure enough, she found out her name was Marlena Lomax. And so I said, okay. And so I took out my list, put the name on there. Look, if nothing else, you know, if everything goes well, ask him for another date. But if not, go to the next one. And look, that was the only plan I had. That was it. Suave, not on your life. But that day, it was one of those deals of, well, I guess I'm going to try to meet her today because I'm wearing one of my better suits, and I may not look this well tomorrow, so I better do something now. So I went to the information desk. It's no longer there. Really didn't have much information there, but there was someone that was stationed there anyway. And I can remember going up there, and Miss Vicky worked there. And I said, Miss Vicky, I said, I need you to call up to whatever floor it was. I said, and find out if Marlena Lomax is there on that floor. She goes, well, what am I supposed to say? I said, well, you're on security. Ask her if she's got a car here. And so, sure enough, she calls up there, and a roommate answered, and Marlena came on and said, yes, I'm here. I do not have a car on campus. So she hung up, and she goes, she doesn't have a car. I said, I really don't care whether she has a car or not. I want to find out if she's here or if she's working or whatever the case. I said, now call back up there and tell her someone would like to meet her down at the post office at such a time, because in a little bit, I'm going to have to go get changed and go to work. And so she goes, okay. So she called up there, and sure enough, she agreed. So far, you know, I'm stepping up to the plate. I said, how could anything go wrong? And so... But on the day that she sang, the interesting thing was this, was the day that she sang, Brother Hiles was here. And I looked up, and then I looked over, and I saw Brother Hiles looked up. And then I saw him reach in his pocket and take out I knew he wasn't writing the name like I was writing the name, but I saw him take a note and put it back in his pocket. And I knew one of two things. Either she was in trouble or there was something wrong. And so I thought, oh, she's going to get in trouble for something. But she still had nice, pretty hair, so I was still going to ask her for a date. And so I said, would you meet me? I didn't say it. Vicky said, would you meet this fella down here by the post office at such and such a time? And so at the appointed time, I walked down there, walked past her first, because she came down with the roommate. You know, that's always the safety zone right there. You got your roommate with you. And so she was there. She didn't know who I was. I walked right past her. I was talking with one of the fellows that worked on my bus route at the time. And I said, well, I'm going to go meet this girl. I said, so I'll talk to you later. So I turned around and went back. And I introduced myself. And the thing that I didn't even realize, that this whole thing was transpiring on April the 1st, April Fool's Day. Now, girls, would you come down to the post office to meet somebody that you didn't know on April Fool's Day? Look, I'm still in the batter's box here. I'm doing well all the way around. This next year in June, we'll celebrate 30 years, and grateful for it. And so you don't take for granted those little invitations and those little opportunities to date, because they will mean something. Have you found 1 Kings yet? I was giving you plenty of time. Now I need to find it. Let's see. Is it before Nehemiah or after?
First Kings chapter number 17. First Kings chapter number 17. The interesting thing about the story that we're going to look at today is the fact that God sees sometimes the things that you and I do not see. And I'm grateful for that. As spiritual as we are and as spiritual as we can be, God still sees things more clearly than you and I, which is a very good thing. That means God gets to be God and we get to be subservient to him. I see here, if you would please notice in verse number 8, the Bible says, "And the word of the Lord came unto him, saying, Arise, get thee to Zarephath, which belongeth to Zidon, and dwell there. Behold, I have commanded a widow woman there to sustain thee." Now, do you understand? This widow woman had no idea that she had a command to sustain someone. All she knew was the plight that she was facing at the time. Little did she know that the prayers that she had made previous to what was getting ready to take place had been heard, and now her answer was on the way. I see here that God makes a statement that he commanded a widow woman to sustain her, or to sustain him. She didn't know it. He did. She did not. As we read on verse number 10, "So he arose and went to Zarephath, and when he came to the gate of the city, behold, the widow woman was there gathering of sticks. And he called to her and said, Fetch me, I pray thee, a little water in a vessel that I may drink." It's not an unreasonable request. And so in that instance, I'm sure that she was obliged to do that. Little did he know everything that was going on in her life. Now, prior to the events that we're reading here, we find out previous to this that there had been no rain that had been in the land. The crops had died off. The cattle and the livestock was not doing well. There was a famine that was now a scourge upon the land. But I see here that God has promised that this little widow woman was going to take care of the prophet. I wonder if he thought, well, I wonder if she's got an inheritance. I wonder if she's rich. I wonder if she's got cattle. I wonder if she's got land. I wonder if she has the ability to take care of me. He wasn't worried about that at the time, but he just knew what God had spoken, and he was interested in obedience of what God had said. So now as we come a little bit further, look at verse number 11, "And as she was going to fetch it, he called to her and said, Bring me, I pray thee, a morsel of bread in thine hand." Well, now everything began to change because he did not know what she was facing. But she's getting ready to tell. Verse number 12, "And she said, As the Lord thy God liveth, I have not a cake, but a handful of meal in a barrel, and a little oil in a cruse, and behold, I am gathering two sticks, that I may go in and dress it for me and my son, that we may eat it and die." Well, all of a sudden now, you would think, oh, he realizes this is probably not the widow woman that's going to take care of him. Surely, Lord, this is not the one that you have placed in my pathway. Surely this is not the one. I'll take the drink of water and then I'll move on. But at that point, God began to open his heart and mind because of something that she stated. We'll come back to that here in just a minute. She stated what she did not have, but stated what she did have. But I want you to notice, because in verse number 13, she has just given the story. We don't have anybody to take care of us. We don't have anyone that's going to meet our needs. We don't have someone that's going to supply for us. There's no government program that's going to take care of us. There's no one that is that I'm going to gather an inheritance from. There's no one to take care of me right now. So this is what we're going to do. I've got enough to make one meal, our last meal. We're going to eat it, and then we're going to die. You know, it's incredible to see as the audacity of the next thing that is stated in verse number 13. "And Elijah said unto her, Fear not. Go and do as thou hast said, but make me thereof a little cake first, and bring it unto me, and after make for thee and for thy son." Now you'd look at this and you'd consider, oh, there's no way. How in the world is this man of God? Little did she know that her answer was going to be a hungry Baptist preacher coming to her doorstep. Little did she know what was going to be the answer to all of her needs at the time was going to be in the person of a prophet that was going to show up. Maybe she thought that it would be like Ernest Ainsley and he was going to heal her or provide some miracle spring water that she could put on her tongue or anoint her checkbook or whatever it is or whatever it may have been at the time. She didn't understand exactly what God had in mind. But let me remind you, sometimes you and I don't understand what God's got in mind either. Sometimes what God does is outside the boundaries of what we expect. We want God to put it in our mailbox and say, here it is, it's just for you. And God oftentimes doesn't work that way.
When I was going through college one time, we had already been married, and I was saving up so we could buy another car. And I can remember on that day that there had been many things that had been taught, many things that had been preached about. But one thing in particular about getting your if you want to put it like this, your money and your heart right with God. And I can remember at the time the statement being made, God said that you give and it'll be given unto you. I try to live that for quite a bit, but when you know when you're in college, two things you don't get enough of. You don't get enough to eat and you don't get enough to sleep. And in that instance, I mean, we didn't have a whole lot of money. But in that instance, I said, okay, Lord, whatever it is that I have, it's yours. You know, if you'd surrender that way too, I promise you, you'll be better off. I promise you, no matter what it is, if God comes to you today and says, you take what you have and you give it to somebody, or you follow the direction, obey what he has to say, I promise you, you'll be more pleased with it. I could give you story after story, but this is just one. And in that instance, I was a very good mechanic. I knew how to work on cars. My in-laws said, Paul, our car, it's got a bad head gasket. We'd like for you to be able to put it back together if you can, because we can't hardly use it right now because of that. And the Lord said, do you have time to do that? I said, no, sir, I don't. He says, what do you have? I said, well, I've got money that I've been saving up for a car. He says, give it to them. Her daddy worked for the railroad. Her mother worked as a secretary at the church. But let me remind you, it doesn't matter what somebody does. Don't try to justify what you should not do. Just obey what God instructs you to do. And he said, you take what you've got in your pocket, but I'm just a college student. He said, don't rationale with me. The time spent between the doing of right and doing of wrong is oftentimes spent rationalizing the doing of wrong. He said, you just do what I've instructed you to do. I said, yes, Lord, and I'll do it. So I sent them the money. And I grumbled. Lord, you know I don't have much money. You know I work hard for what we have. And I don't have enough to buy another car now. We'll have to save up for a good long while. They don't need the money. And all of a sudden, I had to stop and say, I know, but I obeyed. You ever fuss with the Lord after you have obeyed? Oh, don't look at me so pious. You know you have. And in that instance, there's been the occasion where now the Lord said, okay, I'll take care of it. I ask you to give. And that's all I could do and all I was supposed to do. And then God began to give. I was out on my Bible club route, and I was actually, I happened to go by this house, and it had a car that was just sitting in the backyard. And as I said, I was a pretty decent mechanic, so I wasn't worried if there was something wrong, I could probably fix it. And I'm thinking maybe the fellow would sell it at a reasonable price if there's something wrong with it. Maybe it needs a new motor, transmission, whatever the case. I went up and knocked on the door. And the fella came to the door. I introduced myself, told him what I was doing. And I asked him, I said, I saw the vehicle you got in the back. I said, would you be interested in selling that? And he said, well, I'll tell you what. He worked at the steel mill. He said, that was my work car. He said, I drove it back and forth, but I just bought me a new pickup truck. And he said, the thing runs. There's nothing wrong with it, really. It's just dirty. And it was. And I said, well, sir, what would you take for it? He says, you bring me $100, you could have it. I said, I've got $100. I'll be right back. You run to the ATM and bring it back. And we drove that car for, I don't know, 2-3 years. And then I sold it for more than what I bought it for. You know, God knows what you need. He knows where you're at. All he needs you to do is to obey what he says. I see this little widow woman now as she is looking to God to answer a prayer. God, would you take care of me? Maybe you'll send me somebody. Maybe you'll provide in a unique way. He said, I'm going to. You just obey what I ask you to do. Let me stand right here and tell you here this morning. God is not going to ask you to do what you cannot do. It may not always make sense to you, and it may not always sound reasonable to you, and it may not logically even make sense, but I'm telling you, you need to obey what God has instructed you to do. I see this little widow woman now as she steps forth, and she has already told her plight, and now he has already had the audacity to turn around and say, yeah, but feed me first. And so it's kind of comical. She says, okay. And that's exactly what takes place. Look at verse number 14. For thus saith the Lord God of Israel, the barrel of meal shall not waste, neither shall the cruse of oil fail until the day that the Lord sendeth rain upon the earth. And she went and did according to the saying of Elijah, and she and he and her house did eat many days. You see, the problem is once in a while we come here to this point, and notice in verse number 16, and the barrel of meal wasted not, neither did the cruse of oil fail according to the word of the Lord, which he spake by Elijah. The very first thing that she said over in verse number 12 was this. And she said, as the Lord thy God liveth, I have not. There may be a point where you come to a place in your life and you say, God, I don't have anything. Don't underestimate what God has provided for you already. Don't underestimate what you already have in your possession, what you have available to you. You just obey. Look, it didn't make sense to Moses when he came to the burning bush. The very first thing that God asked him to do was to take off your shoes. Now, it was something he could do. Did it make sense? Of course not, because it only made sense to keep the shoes on. The sand was hot. It would get my feet dirty. But God said, I'm going to ask you to do what you can do. Now, this is what I need you to do. Take off your shoes. Don't fuss with God when he asks you to do something. Just obey what he's instructed you to do. It will be sometimes simple. Sometimes it won't make sense. But you'll perceive that you don't have the ability to do what God has asked you to do because you're looking at the big thing. God says, just take off your shoes first. Now, you can do that. And in that instance, this little widow woman now realized that I don't have anything. She underestimated the value of what she did have. God did not. By the way, it doesn't have to be a big faith in God. It just has to be a little faith in a great big God. And that you can have. Let me give you a couple things this morning if I could. Number one, we sometimes find ourselves at the bottom of our barrel. Sometimes we find ourselves at the bottom of our barrel. We see here this little widow woman now had come to a point where she was going to eat her last meal. Her last meal was going to be presented. She was going to eat it. Maybe you've gotten news already and you're concerned. Maybe you've gone to work and now it doesn't seem as favorable as it was. Maybe the classes have not gone exactly like you expected. Maybe mom and dad's circumstances have changed. Maybe grandmother's and grandfather's health has changed. Maybe things have turned sour back home. Maybe things have changed at your home church. Maybe things are going a little bit different than what you had planned. Maybe the person that had promised to help pay your bill now has had to change gears. Maybe things are different than what you expected. And now you find yourself wondering, what am I going to do next? I think I'll just finally just hold out as long as I can, and then we'll just let circumstances take place. Look, God is interested in getting involved in your circumstance. He is. But he's interested more in your character than he is your circumstance. And so God will begin to work on you a great deal more than that. I hasten here. We sometimes find ourselves at the bottom of the barrels for whatever reason it may be. It may be because of sin. Now, look, I understand very clearly that right here in the midst of this wonderful independent fundamental Baptist college that there is still an opportunity to sin. I know that. You carry around in your hand something that we didn't have when I was here in college, and that is the ability to see things on a phone that has never been able to be seen before as easily as it's seen. You have the opportunity to do things that maybe were not available at the time. But you have an opportunity to sin, and you know it already. You've already contemplated it, and you've thought about it. But the truth is, let me remind you, it'll bring you to a very low spot in your life. It honestly will. And you'll find yourself sometimes at the bottom of the barrel. Sometimes it's not sin. Sometimes it's just a disregard for biblical principle, and you find yourself now struggling because of it. Sometimes it's a test by God. You find yourself low. But sometimes you find yourself at the bottom of the barrel. All of us do, when some of the best lessons are learned from there. Number two, because I've got to hasten here, God tests our faith at the bottom of the barrel. God tests our faith at the bottom of the barrel. I think it's kind of interesting because as God now had the opportunity, he could have sent rain to the entire land. But he's interested in taking care of one little widow woman and one individual that now has gotten his attention. She didn't know that there had already been a command of God to take care of the prophet. All she knew is, I can obey. Can you make a cake? Yes, I can. Well, then let's do that then. But you don't understand. It's my last meal. Doesn't matter whether it's your last meal. If it's your last dollar, give it. I was sitting here, and when Dr. Lee Robertson would come to the college, and we'd do it up big. And Dr. Robertson would come, and I can still remember one thing in particular that he said in church yet. I still use it today, and probably will mention it later on. But it works just like this. He said he'd take his hand, and he'd hold up his finger, and he'd shake his arm like this a little bit, and he'd say, "You ministerial boys, you scholars," he said, "you take criticism and compliment the same. Water off a duck's back, just water off a duck's back." And at first it's like, I don't understand that. Not familiar with ducks. He says, take the compliments that you may get because of a message or the complaints that you may get or the criticism and just let it roll off. Just keep going. Oh, I could tell you stories. One of the first times that I had gone to Faith Baptist Church, I'd been there for just a little while, and it was interesting because they had a prayer meeting on Saturday morning. Nothing wrong with that. One of the fellows that was there, He was trying to, quote, help them to find somebody to fill the pulpit. And he was not what he was supposed to be. He wasn't a member there. He was just trying to help. You know, you'll find that those folks that are trying to help oftentimes are a great deal more difficult than what you would expect. And we were there. We'd got done with prayer meeting and things, and we were standing in the entryway there. And he came up and he said, "I don't like the way you preach." Now, the other fellows knew him quite well. I said, "I don't give a flying flip what you like." And the deacon slapped his leg. He said, "I was wondering if somebody tell him something one way or another. And by the way, there needs to come a time where you depend upon God, and you know God's a whole lot bigger than that, than worried about what somebody else says." Did the guy have money? I'm sure he did. Did he have prestige? Yes, he did. Had he had an education? Yes, he did. But I was a pastor of an independent Baptist church, and he wasn't going to tell me how to preach. And in that instance, and so from that, the guy finally, he turned around, and we became pretty good friends at the time. Does he come to my church? Oh, no, he can't take the preaching. But in that instance, he oftentimes will call and say, "You know, I'm praying for you," and things of that nature. I say, "Thanks, John, I appreciate it." But he still remembers that time. But there is a God in heaven. He knows what he's doing. He knows how to take care of things. But there's going to come some time, even though you have surrendered, you've given your life to the service of God, you'll find out that you will end up at some point at the bottom of your barrel, and God will sometimes test your faith at the bottom of the barrel. And you'll think, "God, this is not fair." He told the widow to give the prophet first. God expects you to give to him first also. Faith is testing God when there is no hope. Faith is just believing that God's going to take care of things. I think it's kind of interesting. And by the way, I want you to notice something here. We see in verse number 16. By the way, lastly, and I've got to hasten here, God provides for us at the bottom of the barrel. Remember this, would you? Her barrel was never full, but it was never empty. You and I need to make sure that we tell God, "God, you don't have to fill my barrel for me to believe in you." And by the way, that's going to be where your faith is. It's not going to be because God is going to fill your barrel constantly. It's going to be that it just never runs dry. It may be that God may fill your barrel, but don't require him to do it in order for you to serve him. Say, "God, as long as there's something in that barrel, and as long as I go back and can find something from it," believe me, there's been many a times that I've gone and said, "God, how are you going to take care of this?" And God has miraculously taken care of things. I'll tell you a couple more stories very quickly, just how God takes care of things, where God doesn't have to have your barrel full, just believe in him. When we were leaving here, going to the first place that we were going to be working that the Lord had led us to, I talked to Brother Howes. He said, "Yes, that's a place to go. You head over there, do him a good job." And so I said, "Sure." Went over there, and we sold the place where we lived. We lived in a house trailer. I bought it and put it back together, and we lived there for, was it 2 years? We lived there 2 years. And graduation night, Brother Rick, graduation night. Here we are with all the pomp and circumstance, you know, had the little square beanie on our head, and walked across, had our diploma and everything else, and got home, and it's like, what is that noise? Went back there, the hot water tank had ruptured a line. Man, there was water all over the place. I graduated. Now it's time to set that aside and go get the glue and put things together. Sometimes those things will happen. Well, we sold the house. And the fellow that was buying it was another college student, and he paid me half. I said, "All right." And so we went on to the ministry, never heard anything else. Isn't that the way it usually goes? But paid me half for the house. I wasn't worried about it necessarily. I was glad to somewhat be done with it. So he is there, and so we were in the ministry. We were working. Things begin to get tight. We is down at the bottom of the barrel. And all of a sudden, I said, "Lord, how are you going to take care of things?" And so I went out to the mailbox, opened it up. That fellow that had not paid me for, I guess it was close to almost 10 years now. Almost 10 years. I took out an envelope, and there it was, the remainder of the amount that I needed. And it's like, "Lord, you know what's going on, don't you?" Well, I'm a Baptist preacher, so about two weeks later, I was back in the same point. "Lord, how are you going to take care of things, Lord?" And so I'm praying, "Lord, how are you going to take care of things? I mean, the kids want to eat, and the wife wants to eat." And so I went out to the mailbox again, opened it up, and there was a letter that said IRS at the top corner. Oh, that is not one that you need. But I opened it up and said, "We miscalculated your taxes, and so here's the reimbursement. Here's $2,300 because we had to correct it for you." I'm happy again. Go back inside, rejoicing and things. But strangely enough, a couple weeks later, I'm back at the bottom of the barrel again. "Lord, you're going to have to take care of things again." Went back out to the mailbox again, pulled it out, And inside of that, there was a company that I'd worked for when I was in college, and I opened it up, and they said, we shorted you on your severance packet, so here's $1,500.
Look, your God knows how to take care of you. He knows how to meet the needs. He just needs you to, when you finally get to the bottom of the barrel, realize that God's still there. He knows where you're at. He can supply your needs, and he'll take care of you too. It doesn't matter the circumstances that you faced. It doesn't matter the difficulties that you faced. What does matter is the fact that you've got a God in heaven you can depend on and get a hold of him anytime you need to.
I still got that mailbox. I take it with me, and whenever we move, I take that mailbox.
Look, God knows where you're at. He knows how to take care of you. Don't make God try to fill your barrel. Just say, God, you're not on trial with me. I want you to take care of the needs. The truth is, God is going to ask you to do something, and you're going to say, I don't have the ability. Stop saying you don't. Just take what you do have and use it for the cause of Christ. This little widow woman did not realize what she was going to do. And by the way, not only, and it says here in verse number 15, and she went and did according to the saying of Elijah, and she and he and her house did eat many days. You better understand that God knows how to take care of you even when you are at the bottom of your barrel. He knows where you're at. He knows what you're going through. He knows the circumstances that you face. He knows all the problems that have come your way. He's just looking for somebody that will obey those simple statements that he says. And when he asks you to do those simple things, he just needs you to do them. Now, you can do that today. Just listen to what the Lord has to say. Follow the principles that are given to you. And then just go out and do what God has instructed you to do. You see, the interesting thing is this. Like Israel in the wilderness, God provided for her needs one day at a time. He didn't let it all flow out. She had to continue to work at it. Continue to work at it. Where's all that meal coming from? I don't know. I just know it keeps showing up. I don't know how God's going to supply your needs. I just know he knows how he's going to do it. He just needs somebody that's going to be faithful and listen to him so that it can be done.